Well, we should have our Bibles open to Romans 8, 26 and 27. We're going to pick up. We had a pretty spirited questions, comments, and a few answers last session. I think what we'll do is we'll kind of clear the decks in this session to provide so that we can start nailing down and looking at some of the particulars and some of the details of what's going on here in these two verses. When God comes along and makes this very gracious provision for us, it's not out of the blue, it's not uncommon, it's not in any way out of the ordinary for him to have to say what he says. When he says in verse 26, "Likewise the Spirit also helpeth our infirmities, for we know not what we should pray for as we ought, but the Spirit itself maketh intercession for us with groanings which cannot be uttered. And he that searcheth the hearts knoweth what is the mind of the Spirit, because he maketh intercession for the saints according to the will of God." Now, everything we've done in the last three sessions, the two on Sunday and the last one we just had, really has been to for me as a pastor, to kind of make sure that whatever problems or snags or at least general questions might arise as what sonship prayer is like, or what sonship prayer can consist of for us today in this dispensation of grace, I want to now, in view of all of this, move away from that, because that's really not what this is about. Really, this isn't what our passage in Romans 8, 26 and 27 is talking about. It's not talking about that kind of prayer. Because what we've been talking about is the issue of just what I might call regular type sonship prayer, or your prayer life as having your being a son with your heavenly Father all along. It's sonship prayer, but it's not this specific issue that has to do. You've got to understand the infirmities we have make it so that this searching of the heart has to be done by the Spirit until we get to the point where we don't have to have Him intercede for us. So this is particular, and this is specific. This isn't talking about prayer in general at all. This is talking about something very specific that either should be in your thinking, and I fear it's not, and so we need to go back and make sure it's there, and we'll do that. But this is really a searching of the heart issue, and sonship prayer in connection with this specialized ministry of the Holy Spirit is in connection with your sonship life, and the curriculum that you're going to be educated in as a son, that you're going to be undergoing. Now, I said that, but let me stress it the way it needs to be stressed. It has to do with the curriculum you're going to be undergoing. The curriculum that you're going to be educated in. And I emphasize going to be, because that's not what's happening now. You're not at that point yet. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about, to get kind of set our thinking, I think, exactly in the position it needs to be in, so we clear away all the clutter, or maybe that wasn't the best way to put it, all that's unnecessary to this subject. It's not like those things we talked about was just clutter, but those are great things and things that need to be addressed, but that's not what this is addressing. And so what we want to do is kind of clear the table and leave just this one thing on it. And by that, just that one thing, I'm talking about the searching of the heart issue. And so we need to kind of get back to and recognize what's going on in Romans 8, 26 and 27. If, this is a big if in most cases, you're going to be honest with the text and the context, and if you're going to be true and honest with the context, it all has to do with this father-son relationship, this intimacy of fellowship and communion and communication relationship that is the final component of godly sanctification, what that provides for. And primarily it deals with you and your Father making sure that the education He's going to give you will work. That's what this is ensuring, that this thing's going to work, that you're not going to have something in your thinking or something that is actually is happening to you in reality or you're undergoing, whereby you would look at what's going on and saying, "Well, you never thought about this. This puts an end to it. This is a weak link in this chain of provision. No, there's not. There's not a weak link in the chain. But you would be inclined to believe that if you were perceiving everything properly in sonship orientation, you'd be inclined to think there's one link in all of this. If it's contingent upon me knowing the knowledge of my Father by engaging in Him in sonship prayer, there's something that I know that He said to me back there that makes it so that this isn't going to work. It's just not going to work. So these two verses make it so that you realize, now son, I've already thought of that, and I've provided for that. Just relax. It will work. That's what this is dealing with. That it's geared for your success in every way, more than you can even comprehend right at the moment. And that the problems, that's another way of saying the infirmities that you presently have in connection. You say, well, I don't even know what my infirmities are. We'll get to that. But right now, I'm just telling you in general, the infirmities that you presently have in connection with that curriculum success, that won't thwart your success at all. In fact, your Father knew about the infirmities you would have as this son who is just now in sonship establishment, and who will still have some infirmities in phase two of level one when he starts his education in those four godly decision-making skills of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, that through those, this will start to fade away. But as you get before you get your legs under you really good, you're going to have these. And he knew about this. He provided for it. He knew long before you ever came along that this would be the case, and provided for it. He knew they would come up in your mind. He knew they would be a bothersome thing to you. And now he tells you about, look, here's how I've provided help for that. And that's why the word helpeth is there. It's a help. This helps, and he's provided help for you with a specialized ministry of the Holy Spirit so that you can relax and know this has to be going on. And you just say, I know it's going on. I don't feel it. And I'd never know it was happening, except he told me it was. And I know it's happening because he said it. That when I pray and I don't know what to pray for as I ought, this takes place so that the Father can respond and do his job. And so therefore, it's not a problem. Not at all. And I think that some of the trouble you might be having, if you're having any, maybe you're not, hopefully you're not. I know some of you aren't, but some of you may be. And what I mean by trouble, I mean that putting your finger on exactly what those infirmities are that you do have. And by the way, you do have them. I don't mean this to be critical of you, but by the way, I still have them. I have these infirmities too. Maybe not to the degree you do, but I guarantee you that every one of you here tonight has these infirmities. So you do have them. And I have them to a large degree as well. None of us are exempt from having them at this point in the education. You would naturally have them. It's not a bad thing. It's a natural thing. Get it out of your head that's bad. It's not bad. It's just very natural. It's the way sons and fathers are, and someone who's progressed and knows the whole thing to someone who's just getting started. In other words, if we've cleared away, like I said, the table of having to deal with how to pray or just how to pray in general, again, that's because most people look at this passage as if it says, likewise, the Spirit also helpeth our infirmities, for we know not how to pray as we ought. That's not what that says. It says, for we know not what we should pray for as we ought. That's hugely different. If we can then kind of clear the table from all of the other issues related to prayer for now, and just leave this one thing on the table, our infirmities of not knowing what to pray for as we ought, the Spirit of God making intercession to the Father for us, telling the Father what we need to tell Him but can't in order for Him to do His job, but He can't because we can't voice it, we can't say it to Him, we can't articulate it. That's what's on the table here. Now, that may be three things or four, but those are the issues on the table right now. Our infirmities of not knowing what to pray for as the Spirit of God makes intercession for us, the interceding He does, telling the Father what we need in order for Him to do His job, but He can't do it until the Spirit tells Him what it is. That's how specific this is. So it takes us out of the area of, well, Father, here's how my day went. That's not what this is about. Here's what I got, Father. This is great. I really appreciate the adoption of sons and Abba and all of the crying Abba Father. The creature. Man, this is great. You got a great business. What are these things that we're going to be? That's not this. You've got intelligence along those lines. It may not be as much as you want to have, but you've got intelligence along those lines to be able to talk to Him about that. And to pour your heart out about how your day went, how good it went, how bad it, whatever. That's not this. This is something that has to do with the curriculum on down the line, and you not being able to know, you knowing what your infirmities are, and you don't know what to say to your Father about them. Now, that may not be clear yet, but we're going to get it clear. What I'm after here is that, once again, if you're having trouble coming up with what the infirmities are, I believe that it stems not from getting really a full the full benefit, and maybe you're now beginning, it's beginning to dawn on you, I can't drop a stitch in this. If I do, I'm going to need to pull that stitch back out somewhere. I'm going to need everything I'm being told, and that's from the get-go. You need all this. This isn't typical Bible study. This isn't learning for learning's sake. This isn't learning Bible data, me handing out a test, and even if we did that, and you passing it, then we put it away, and then it's kind of, as time goes on, that gets dimmer and dimmer and dimmer and forgotten. That's not how sonship is. This has to be up front. And so, maybe we need to get more muscles when it comes to getting the full benefit out of something and keeping that benefit going. And so I think if we have trouble here coming up with what the infirmities are, it stems from that issue of not getting the full benefit out of what it means to have this father-son, father-daughter relationship as the reality of life and not just as a concept of doctrine. Those are two entirely different things. And the only way you're ever going to get that relationship out of being the mere concept in your thinking to being a deep, thought-provoking reality, There's no shortcut to this, and there's no mystery to it at all. And it's the simplest thing that you can possibly imagine. What do you think I'm going to say? No? He said, reckon. To get this from being just the mere concept to the deep, thought-provoking, beneficial means that it's supposed to be of what this relationship and the reality of it in your life is, more than just a concept of doctrine. What do you think you're going to have to do with it? Believe it. That's good. That's right. But to get it, to get the full benefit out of it. Apply it. Yeah. It's far more simple than that. Practice it. Yeah. Talk with Him. Trust Him. Those are all good. It's more simple than that. That's getting more on the line of it. What did somebody do it? Yeah, just do it. You have to spend time with it. Now, you may look at me and that may go over your head like that's no big deal. I wish I could articulate to you how important that is. Spending time, and I don't mean like setting aside rigid time to where you're going, but rolling it over, minding it, having it in your mind. And when you do have those opportunities to think on things, Think on it very simply. He is my Father. I'm His Son. And when it comes to these things, the only way you're ever going to get some of the real benefits out of that isn't from this pulpit or from a cleverly concocted, wisely, clever, witty turn of words and phrases from me. That's not going to work. Remembering it the way I said it isn't nearly as important as remembering the way God said it in His Word. And it's the issue of spending time with it, not just spending physical time with it, but spending mental time on it, spending time in your mind with that concept, where it moves from being a concept to being a reality, and you realize, hey, this affects this, this affects that, this affects the way I thought about this group, or this affects the way I feel about other things. It affects you as you spend time with it. And I can't impress upon you how important that is. But spend time in it with your thoughts and let that develop, like a picture has to have time to develop in your heart and in your, or it used to. That analogy won't work in the digital age anymore, will it? But you used to have to spend time in the dark room, which was as important as the time you spent with the camera. Because if you take a guy like Ansel Adams, one of the things that set his pictures apart from everybody else wasn't his camera, it was that, but it wasn't just that, it's what he did in the dark room. And how he would when he's developing something, he would shade parts of it for various. It was amazing what he could do to draw your eye to something. And it's that development that I'm after. So that, and I'm just saying this in passing, because a lot of the things we deal with as sons really need that. They need to have the time to register and make a deep, thought-provoking reality in your mind and let that develop so that you begin to you'll know it's developed when you start seeing ramifications of it. Gosh, that's gonna mean something down here. That's gonna mean something that part of my life. And this is gonna mean something that, this is gonna touch that part, and that part of my life. Now you're starting to think about it, and you're seeing the ramifications that all has now on you, you're going to live, and you're going to learn as your Father's son and as your Father's daughter. And to carefully think about what all that means, and that begins to generate the kind of thoughts and the thinking that's going to end up with you realizing when you look at the curriculum and you read ahead and you see Ephesians and Philippians and Colossians and the Thessalonian epistles and you see what's out there in that curriculum, that you're going to start thinking about that as you look for what it calls for, you end up realizing that you are, at least at first, you are at a disadvantage. I couldn't even get in the same arena with Timothy. I would feel like almost a misfit at the Thessalonian church, except they would be so mature that they would welcome me and see to it that I was so well taken care of as the weaker brother. I wouldn't, but I would be inclined, just because I know I've identified some areas that demand you and I ask our Father for something. But you don't know what to ask for. You don't know what to pray for as you ought. And really, this is what it takes, what takes place in sonship orientation, not sonship establishment. This is given here by the time we get here. This is to have taken place in all the time between the time we went through Romans 8, 14, and 15 and now, that these thoughts should be there in your mind and start taking place. And there is a, by the way, and I don't think we have time to do this tonight, but there's a wonderful thing that the Father is constantly doing with His son and daughter. And it's a biblical expression, and I love this expression. Paul will use it frequently. He will talk about enlarging your heart. And a father wants to start doing, when you're enlarging someone's heart, you're making room for something you're going to put in there. And there's an awful lot that happens in sonship orientation where the father says things to his son, orients him in a way to enlarge his son's heart and see that that enlargement is taking place. He's making room. He's getting this junk out and that junk out, and he's making room. His heart is being enlarged. So the father's heart and the son's heart start intermeshing, and then they're going to start intertwining with one another. And soon they are going to be indistinguishable between whose heart is whose. And I'm using that kind of terminology to tell you about that, because those are things that generate things like closeness and intimacy that's involved in all of this. And the father and son's heart are to entwine and enmesh, so there's not going to be anywhere down the line where the son's, as Paul uses this wonderful expression, his bowels are going to be straightened. He's not going to be straightened in his bowels. He's not going to have a blockage or a narrowing in not only his thinking, but in his heart's perception of how wonderful all of this is, how needful it all is, and how desirable it all is. That's part of what crying Abba Father was supposed to have been about. And that's an ailment that you're going to be susceptible to everywhere down the line of your sonship life, of being straightened in your bowels. But there's a cure for it. And like I said, we're not going to run over there right now. I don't know if we have time to do this or not. I don't think so. But you're all familiar enough with this. Well, I am going to run over because I want one verse. If you come over to Luke chapter 15, I know this is an entirely different context. I know that this is an entirely different program. I'm not concerned with the context or the program. This is what is commonly referred to as the parable of the prodigal son in Luke 15. And this wouldn't be a bad idea to just, if you want something to do for fun, look back at this parable from time to time as you go through it, and you'll start to perceive how this focuses upon the issue of sonship and sonship education and sonship edification in Israel's program. And you'll be able to distinguish who the one son is, what the elder son is, and what his role is, and who he represents in Israel's program, and who the younger son is, and who he represents in Israel's program. But I'm not after the context. What I'm after is something else. And as you go through this, and you know what's been going on in this, it's probably the most familiar story that anybody ever hears. And very few pastors ever know what's going on here, but the issues that arise with the son having asked for his inheritance, and his father gives it to him, and he goes off and he spends it all on riotous living. He blows it all. And you know the generalities of the story. He winds up in a place that no Jew should ever wind up, on a hog farm, desiring, you know, which is kind of funny the way the Lord put that in there. Because if ever there wasn't to be one industry never exist in Israel's history, it was to be a hog farm. There was never to be any hog farming going on in Israel. But he winds up at a hog farmer's farm, and he would eat what the slop the hogs were getting. He comes to himself and he sobers up and he recognizes and realizes that his father's wisdom was better for him all along. So he makes up a little speech. I love this part of the story because he makes his speech up that he's going to say to his father. And what I really like is that when he finally gets to the point where he's finally back with his father and he's going to make this speech, and of all things, part of his speech says, "I'm no longer worthy to be your son." The father cuts him off and never lets him give his whole speech. I love how he just cut him off. But what I'm after is, and maybe you can spend a little time with this yourself and enjoy it, is to see the attitude of the father toward this son. And what he's doing in everything he's doing. Come down and look at verse 20. After the son has made up his little speech in verses 18 and 19, it says, "And he arose and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him." Do you know that his father was looking for him every day? He let him go. He's an adult son. But his father was looking for him every day. Something had now severed this fellowship that they used to have. He saw him a great way off. By the way, this is the only place in the entire Bible where God is depicted as running. He runs to his son. But when he was a great way off, his father saw him in compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And then the son tries to get out his little speech. The son said, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no worthy to be called thy son." But his father said to him, he interrupts him. He said to his servants, he's like not even paying attention to his speech. He turns to his servants and he says, "Bring forth the best robe and put on him." By the way, these are all adoption things. "Put the best robe on him, put the ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. Bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." They began to be merry. Now there's a whole other part of this that goes on with the other son. All I'm after is that when you go through that, that father says what he says and does what he does in every way he does it to reestablish the fellowship with his son. If nothing else, that serves as a reminder to every one of us of how enthusiastic our Father is to have this relationship with you. And everything he does is designed to stop the son from having his bowels straightened, to stop the son from having his heart narrowed. Everything he says to him in this is to enlarge his son's heart to get back to the way that relationship was before his son left him. And that's exactly what will go on with you and me. That issue of the father doing everything to get the intimate relationship going again and to keep that uninterrupted and unperturbed. That's why the reason I'm doing this is because I don't want you to stray away from the issue that we should be perceiving this the way our father is, not the way we perceive it as sons getting it. But what he's done to give us this provision so that he's so desirous of being our father and desirous of being his son that he provides for enlarging our heart so that we will remain constant and unperturbed even in the face of infirmities when we know not what to pray for as we ought. Now, I say all that, and to some degree, again, just to underscore the naturalness of sonship prayer taking place, for you to want that and to desire to, on a daily basis, engage in this intimate, close fellowship and communion and communication with your Father, to go over your day with him. And we'll see David doing that when we go over to the 139th Psalm, and we're going to do that. The desire to not just do that, but have him do something. Have him evaluate my day. Have him evaluate the effectual working of the things that you're perceiving and learning. But it goes one step beyond that issue to the issue of perceiving. Listen to this carefully. Perceiving how what you've learned can apply to many other aspects of the details of your life. Did you catch that? We're not there yet. But when we finally get to Romans 12, 13, 14, 15, everything you're going to be taught is an instruction in a particular component. Then it's as it were given to you, and the Father almost looks at it and says, "Now what else do you think you can do with that? Because, son, the truth is, you can do a whole bunch of things with that one component that I just gave you. It's not designed to work one place. It's designed to work a whole bunch of places." And that's done because you realize what the aims and the goals and objectives of that sonship, that of your sonship life, what it has in view. And so you want to naturally meet those objectives and do it intelligently. Now, I'm approaching it this way with all this kind of care that I'm taking tonight for a reason. And that's before we start dealing with the details of it, but it's to both, I think we need to kind of clear our minds out of what isn't pertinent to our passage, and get our thinking where it needs to be in order for these infirmities that you have in connection with sonship prayer to make sense and to be the natural thing. Not unnatural at all, but the natural things that they are. And I just want to make one more critical observation before we do that, that should get you thinking with what's going on here in Romans 8, 26 and 27. I think once we do this, we're ready to start digging. And then we can look at what the infirmities are. And that's this. It has to do with this active involvement that we have and the interactivity of the bidirectional communication that's taking place and the intimacy of fellowship that has with our Father that we're supposed to have and that we're designed to have in sonship, which includes sonship prayer. That's all something, listen carefully, and Helen was right on when she was talking about this. It grows, it develops, and progresses and matures through the effectual working of the curriculum. That's how it grows. It develops through the effectual working of the curriculum. Now, that may not mean anything to you right now, but let me explain. It starts off in sonship orientation with the measure that Romans 8, 14, and 15 provides for so that you can cry intelligently, Abba, Father. Then there's another step that it's going to take all the way through the effectual working of sonship establishment. But you have to recognize, and I mean this very, you've got to really listen here. You've got to recognize that the real, what's the expression I ought to use? We use the expression all the time where the rubber meets the road. The real rubber meeting the road, so to speak, aspect of the intimacy of fellowship, as well as the expressions of it, your verbal expressions, thought expressions, and the kind of activities like sonship prayer itself that bring it all home so personally, those get underway, listen to this carefully, more pointedly, more specifically, once the renewing of the mind with the actual details of the curriculum itself, once all that gets underway. Because you realize what I'm saying? Put the table of contents back up here. That intimacy of fellowship, that asking for what you ought to ask for, all of that comes out of the growth and progress of the curriculum. The curriculum really doesn't get started until you get here, which is Romans 12, 1 and following. Because it's the first part of the second phase of level 1, to receive the instruction of wisdom. The first part of the second phase of level 1, sonship education, in which you and I actually begin to learn. You're now instructed. You learn information that by its very nature, there are, I think, 6 components to the wisdom. And by its very nature is going to put us in the position where we have to, when we come to our Father to review our day with Him, as father and son, father and daughter together, we're going to actually have some things, listen, to say to Him about living our sonship life. Living it. Now, I don't mean to discourage you here, but you're not doing that right now. In other words, this is a critical distinction to make. We're not just going to be talking to Him about being a son. That's where we are now. Our talk and our expression to Him largely has to do with us being His Son and Him being our Father and all of the things that surround that. But we're going to, when we get to this point, We're going to begin talking to him about actually living as a son. And to me, that's a very significant point of progress that needs to be recognized by us in view of what we're dealing with here in Romans 8, 26 and 27. It has that in view. And in view of all of this, and I realize that you're not going to take me wrong when I say that, hopefully you're not going to take me wrong when I say what I'm about to say. I just want to say it this way to get my point across, all right? In all that you and I go through, from the truth of the matter is, I got my Bible open. In all that you and I go through from Romans 8, really, from Romans 8, 14, I'll say. From Romans 8:14 all the way to Romans 8:39, you don't start living like a son yet. That's the honest truth of it. You're not living like, how do you know? To live like a son, you have to be instructed in wisdom, at least, to actually start living it, to putting some information about living it into the details of your life, and then go on with justice, judgment, and equity. That's why I call what happens to you, first of all, orientation, and then after that, establishment. They're very critical and important, but you need to kind of differentiate the difference between just being a son, and there's a lot to talk about, and there's a lot to deal with in that. That's not a small matter. It's not a minimal matter. But there is a difference about being a son and living as a son. And in light of, and I'll get back to why I'm doing this, in light of who we are and living in this dispensation of grace, we've even got three chapters that follows this section of Romans 8, 14 through 39, we've got three chapters that follow this that has some critical information in them that, in a sense, we've got it, that has to be dealt with before we actually start living as sons. Now, I don't mean to demean where we are now or say that you're not any less a son or any less a daughter, but that you've got to face some realities here because they're important the way you see what's going on in these two verses. And so then after those three chapters are dealt with, when you finally get to Romans 12:1, that, based upon everything that's been you've been going through, you encounter the sonship checkpoint at Romans 12:1, one of the biggest you'll ever encounter, by which you respond with your readiness. One of the reasons why you are presenting yourself as a living sacrifice, by doing that, you are responding with your readiness now to live as a son. All about being a son is now established. Now I'm presenting my body as a living sacrifice, and by doing that, that's tantamount to me saying I am now claiming that I am fully ready to begin living as a son. Let's go to class. Open our new books and start the curriculum. And I say that not only because that's all true, but I also say that to make sure that we realize there are, like Helen was bringing out, she called it limbo, there are some limitations where we are right now when it comes to being able to fully understand and appreciate some things. I don't mean to be disappointing to you. We're going to understand the searching of the heart far better than you understand it now, and I think you'll be perfectly satisfied with it. But you're not going to understand it fully. Not yet. That will occur later on. That's just the nature of how a design curriculum is supposed to take place. By the way, do you see the futility of studying anything categorically? I don't know if that's occurred to you or not, but how none of that works because it doesn't take these things into consideration. So, you're going to be limited in some of the things that you understand and appreciate, especially when it comes to the issue of all the activities of sonship prayer, because the full measure of the effectual working of sonship prayer really isn't going to be something that we're going to participate in until we get to the point where the curriculum actually starts to be dealt with by us. That's when we're going to really start the full measure of participating in all of that. And it and starts to give us, as each one of those components comes along, it gives us information that's designed to do some specific things that become, they will become kind of the topic of the day type thing in our sonship prayer with our Father. So right now, the truth of the matter is, and to close this all up, what we're dealing with in sonship orientation and establishment issues, the majority of what takes place under sonship prayer for us, and the majority of what takes place in connection with our Father searching our hearts, all comes down to evaluating the effectual working of our sonship orientation and our sonship establishment. That's all He can evaluate. In other words, it doesn't come down to, hey, boy, can you handle Romans 15, the first 7 verses? Well, no, Father, we're not even there yet. And our Father isn't so stupid that He ever asks us to handle that yet, because He hasn't taught it to us yet. And remember, our Father is the perfect teacher. He never expects you to handle anything He hasn't taught you. He doesn't hold you responsible for things that you have no ability to deal with yet. So, if all that makes sense, then since Romans 8, 26 and 27 assume and expect you already know what the infirmities are and the searching of the heart is in general, then the next thing we need to do on Sunday morning is make sure we do know what those two matters are in general. And God has already, previous to Romans, said something that would alert you to what kind of infirmities you will have and that you do have. And He's already said some things in another place about what the searching of the heart consists of. And what we're going to do now is go back and see what they are on Sunday morning. All right, we'll stop right there.